Good evening, Michael Malice here with a fresh dose of Nightshade for you to tape three intros to. We got a lot to cover today, and I'm very, very excited to get to it. Top story, this is a big one that's kind of flying. That is kind of... Why is he on the currency if he's not a president? Answer me that. The U.S. has reached agreement with the Taliban on a week-long reduction of violence that could lead to U.S. troop withdrawal from Afghanistan. This is according to senior administration official on Friday, cautioning that the insurgents must honor commitments for the accord to stick. I can only imagine them sitting down and negotiating, and they're like, all right, look, we want to get the hell out of here. This is bumfuckistan. We don't want to be here. You have to be here. It's your house. We don't want to be here. So can you please not, like, blow up people for a month? No. All right. What can you give us? 1 week. 1 week. I don't know why they're talking like a poo. 1 week. Maybe. All right. We'll take it. Deal. So the deal was struck in protracted negotiations in the Qatari capital of Doha and was announced after a meeting between Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, Mark Esper, the defense secretary, whose name I have literally never heard before. I'm not joking. I've never heard his name before. That is amazing. And Afghan President Ashraf Ghani on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference. The accord, if it holds, could pave the way for an agreement by the end of the month on a U.S. troop withdrawal from Afghanistan, which has been a long-sought objective for U.S. President Donald Trump, who has vowed to stop the quote-unquote endless wars as he seeks re-election in November. It was violence that derailed the signing of the agreement in September. Now we have an agreement on the reduction of violence, is according to a senior administration official. And should they implement what they're committed to doing, we will move forward with the agreement. An agreement on the reduction of violence. A week. This is okay. The 7-day period has not yet started, but will go into effect soon. Okay. Give us a week to not blow up people. Well, we're going to have to take some time to get ready because we have a lot of blowing up people plans in effect. Can you not blow them up like starting now? Do you even hear yourselves? What are we going to not blow up people? This is going to take time. So there was no immediate comments from the Afghan government or the Taliban. Oh, Mr. President. Yeah, what is it, Mike? I'm getting a text message from Afghanistan. Yeah, what does it say? Lulu, 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 lulu. There remains a long way to go to a peace settlement and end to the nearly 2-decade-long military presence that began shortly after the 9/11 attacks by Al-Qaeda. U.S. officials have been clear that the 13,000 U.S. troops will be cut to 8,000 this year, with or without a withdrawal deal. Okay. A U.S. withdrawal agreement would be followed by negotiations on a political settlement between the Taliban and an Afghan delegation that would include government officials. One of the first issues would be a nationwide ceasefire. This so-called intra-Afghan dialogue is likely to be difficult and protracted. There's no way this doesn't end with... I'm not a foreign affairs expert. It sounds like there's no way this doesn't end without the Taliban being in government in some capacity. Okay. The Taliban has refused to speak directly to the government, which they denounce as a U.S. puppet. Kabul's negotiating team has yet to be named, and there has been long wrangling over its composition. It also remains to be seen that the Taliban leadership has full control over all its fighters. They can't just send out an email to be like, look, give us a week of not blowing up people. You could blow up twice as many in 2 weeks. Let's do that. Oh, okay. We could do that. Here's an interesting one. Ron Paul, who I have not played a clip from Ron Paul in a very long time. Oh, okay. I didn't recognize it with the glasses. Dr. Paul with the glasses. Obviously, many of you are big Ron Paul fans, as am I. And he was on Fox earlier this week, or over the weekend, on Jesse Waters' show to discuss what he thought about the Trump presidency. And it's interesting to hear what Ron Paul had to say.
There's no better time to grade his presidency so far than now. So, here with us
That sentence makes no sense. There's no better time to grade the Trump presidency than now. Why? I missed the first half of that sentence, but I'm sure there are other good times to. You know, the best time is to rate the presidency when it's done. That's maybe the election, the midterms. Okay, sorry.
Ron Paul, former presidential candidate and host of the Ron Paul Liberty Report. Okay, Congressman, let's begin with immigration policy. What grade would you give the president there?
Depends on what day of the week it is. it's up and down. He doesn't get an A plus from me. I don't like walls and fences and things like that. But actually, immigration is down. I don't know whether that's because of Trump or whether he has helped do that. You know, so the illegal immigration.
I don't know if it's because of Trump or whether he helped do that. I don't know which of these options it is. Is it because of Trump? Or is it because he helped do that? I don't know which button. It's like the meme. Oh God, I made the comment. For those of you who've read the book, I was in something called the Troll Board, which was, you know, very heavily Ron Paul based, and came out of people who worked on the campaign. And I had made the point at the time that he's the Grandpa Simpson of libertarianism, where he just says sentences and fragments that don't really make sense, but you still kind of like him anyway. And I'm glad to see that little has changed. Okay, please go ahead.
Immigration is down, so I'd give him a low C. He doesn't get a high A, and I don't think he's completely failed, because he does talk a little bit about my theory about what we do is, if you don't subsidize something, it will help, and if you do subsidize something, you get more of it. I think the subsidies for illegally entering this country is the main motivating factor for us to have our problem.
So are you talking about benefits in terms of entitlements or in-state tuition, things like that, driver's licenses like they're doing here in New York?
Yeah, all that for a starter. But it's also a special way to become a citizen, easy road to citizenship, jumping in front of the line and getting free education. I mean, it makes no sense at all. All I can say is, if most Americans were in the same situation, they'd probably be praying or hoping they could, you know, get some of that. But I just don't think it's the
low
right
C
thing
minus
to take
is
from
a tough
one
grade.
Why is he talking over him?
I would give him maybe a B plus. But, you know, we just have word right now that the Pentagon, here it is, just transferred close to $4 billion to fund the border wall construction. So I think it's moving in the right direction, but, you know, we can disagree on that.
Wait, hold on. I can't believe that 4 years later he thinks there's going to be a wall. Like, we got this funding. It's moving. The guy is an international hotel magnate. His dad was in real estate. The amount of experience this guy has, Trump, in terms of building structures, is probably like one of the best on earth. It's been 4 years. There's no wall. And it's also funny how sometimes the story changes from it's the Democrats' fault there's no wall, we're definitely having a wall, and then like we've already built like a lot of the wall. Like, what do you – so I don't – I have not been following this wall talk, but it does not seem to be going in the direction that he claimed in 2015 and 2016. And I certainly do not believe that the wall just got 10 feet higher. Go ahead.
About his economic policy, where do you stand on that in terms of a grade?
Oh, partially I endorse, you know, most conservatives, you don't even have to be a libertarian Austrian economist to say lowering taxes and lowering the regulations is a good idea. But no, he's a long way from what Austrian economics teaches, what free markets are all about. And that is, it deals with the monetary policy, it deals with the Federal Reserve. You want to have interest rates designed by the marketplace, not by putting pressure on the Federal Reserve and say, get those rates down.
Okay,
and on the short run, it's sort of like...
Great work from Ron Paul. I feel like this is something that only the people who follow me and are in my personal friendship circles are able to follow, with him talking about the Federal Reserve. I can only imagine what the mainstream median person thinks when he hears that. Although, in all fairness, Ron Paul did launch this huge movement specifically and largely based on his attacks on the Fed. So I could be talking out of my ass, as I am wont to do. Let's update the catastrophe that is currently going on in German politics as the dominoes continue to fall after the Thuringian election, which I had covered back in, I think it was October. So Mike Moehring, who's the head of the Thuringian chapter of the Christian Democrats, that is Angela Merkel's party, he's the one who, not intentionally, but ended up joining with the Alternative for Deutschland. He had reached out to them, and they had elected the member of the Free Democrats as head of that state, and there was a huge, huge backlash, which even took down AKK, who was supposed to be Angela Merkel's successor as chancellor and was at the time head of the CDU and is stepping down. He said on Friday he's also stepping down after a shock vote this month in that state, which raised questions about the party's willingness to find common cause with the nationalists. In a video on Twitter, I wonder how Germans use Twitter. You only allow 280 characters, and all their words have 500. He said he hoped to bring much-needed peace to the party and allow it to find a common path. He'd led the Thuringian CDU since 2014 and had been facing ever louder calls for his resignation. What's amazing is that the AfD secretly endorsed the Free Democrat Party, and it's the CDU who's being destroyed. They didn't communicate with each other. It's just fascinating to watch. He had already announced last week that he intended to resign as the leader of the state parliamentary party in May, but that move may be accelerated, with 8 CDU parliamentarians pushing for a confidence vote as early as next week. The announcement comes after lawmakers from his chapter voted together with the AfD and the Free Democrats to elect that FDP premier in the state to replace the popular leftist politician Bobo Ramelow, who is from, the left party, which were the communists. State representatives of the left party, the Social Democrats and the Greens, are to meet with 4 CDU lawmakers on Monday to discuss how to resolve Thuringia's political crisis. I like it. Like, everyone gets together. They don't even elect an AfD guy. They elect a Free Democrat guy who are somewhat close to the mainstream of German thought. No one regards them as extremists. So you get a mayor, a premier, whatever the title is, of this state from the Free Democrats. And now it's like, oh my God, we have to have a panic. It's like, you didn't elect an AfD person. This is how you're supposed to build coalitions. This is how it works. Sources close to the affair say Möhring will not attend the meeting. And at a national level, the CDU rejects any institutional cooperations with the AfD, but also with the left. So let's break this down. They reject cooperation with the AfD and also with the left. And now they're sitting down with the left, the Greens and the Social Democrats in Thuringia. So one of those walls is breaking. As I said, many weeks on the show, at a certain point, you're going to have to name your poison. You're going to have to work with one of them. So we're going to keep updated on that story in the weeks to come. Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon had some very interesting things to say over the weekend, and I thought I would play this clip, Sloppy Steve with his 2 shirts and what he and his points of view. Watch this.
This morning with this, Michael Bloomberg reportedly considering Hillary Clinton as his running mate. Bloomberg's campaign responding to the news saying this, we are focused on the primary and the debate, not vice president speculation. Joining me right now, former White House chief strategist and the War Room host Steve Bannon, the man who called this back in August on this program. Steve, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Maria.
Thank you so much for joining us. So you knew Hillary Clinton was going to come into this race. You said it and everybody was thinking, what? Are you kidding me? But you were right. If this is true, assess the situation,
Pause this. Look at the headline. So let's break this down because I was going to cover this later. Drudge reported over the weekend, Drudge Report, that Bloomberg is considering Hillary Clinton as his vice president. In fact, let's do that story right now. That's the last one, right? Can we fast forward to that? To set this up. So, yeah. Oh, God. God, this is like Hellraiser, the Golden Girls edition. Just horrific nightmare fuel. So Mike Bloomberg is considering Hillary Clinton as a vice presidential running mate after positive internal polling about the potential pairing. This is according to the Drudge Report, which cited sources close to the Bloomberg campaign. Okay. It really sounded like there's a lot of speculation that this was some Democratic candidate who planted this to take down Bloomberg. And it's very odd that he would be throwing out this feeler. I am very, 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 very dubious of the claim that she would be happy taking a number 2 seat on a ticket after she had won the popular vote by a huge margin last time. her argument would be, put me on the top of the ticket, or why am I number two to someone whose best job was being elected mayor of New York? I was a senator. I was Secretary of State. I mean, that is a very fair argument for her to make. So according to Drudge, in such a partnership, Bloomberg would change his official residence from New York to Colorado or Florida, because the Constitution suggests there may be limitations in both members of presidential ballot residing in the same state. This happened in 2000, when Dick Cheney was named they figured out Dick Cheney was going to be the vice presidential candidate because he had changed his registration from Texas back to his native Wyoming. So the director of communications for the Bloomberg campaign said in a statement to CNBC, "We are focused on the primary and the debate, not vice president speculation." Yeah, I'm sure literally all the candidates are thinking who would be the running mate. Yeah, they don't have to be focused. And a spokesperson for Hillary did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Now, helping Trump's victory in the last election were his wins in key industrial states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Oregon, Michigan. They're going to be competitive in 2020 as well. Clinton was asked earlier this year by Ellen DeGeneres if she would consider running as vice president. And she said, well, that's not going to happen, but no, probably no. It's very odd Drudge doesn't lie. So when a story makes it to Drudge, you have to kind of red pill it and be like, okay, what sequence of events could have caused it such that I'm seeing that which I'm seeing? It could be correct that Bloomberg is throwing out a trial balloon. Like, how is this going to play out? It could be that this is Hillary signaling vote for, Bloomberg is my guy to stop Bernie. Because she's been very public about her hatred of Bernie, and she never forgives a slight, even though he endorsed and campaigned for her. What does she care? It's what have you done for me lately? So that could be her way of showing, okay, this is our guy. I've said it before. I'm going to say it till I'm blue in the face. I cannot wrap my head around the Democrats nominating a billionaire who was elected only as a Republican, never elected as a Democrat, elected as an independent as well, who did not do the debates, who did not compete in Iowa and New Hampshire. I don't see how they put that over on their party, especially because in this year, there's so much energy on the Democratic side. You have Trump. It's like, we got to get this guy out of here. To replace Trump with Bloomberg, to me, I don't see how you sell it. I don't. But that's just me. Let's see what Bannon has to say. He's a smarter man than I am.
Of Bloomberg and Clinton.
Look, Matt Drudge put his name on this yesterday. This is original reporting from Matt Drudge. If Drudge puts his name on something and there hasn't been any denials, it's money good.
Yep.
I'm not saying it's going to happen, and Matt Drudge is not saying it's happening, but there are clearly discussions going on. You really haven't had a denial from the Bloomberg camp, and you certainly haven't had a denial from the Hillary Clinton camp. And I think this goes back to the heart of why the Democratic Party has lost its way. The Democratic Party does not understand today, 8 months from Election Day, why they lost 2016. They don't understand about managed decline of our elites. They don't understand why Donald Trump won. They don't understand the message of Donald Trump. They've spent 3 years trying to destroy him. They failed to destroy him. 8 months from the election, they have nothing. So now they have a moderate Republican mayor oligarch of New York combining with a globalist, a multi-time failure presidential candidate to try to do a combination. And I think that this shows you the desperation of the Democratic Party and really the personal vendetta that the Clintons and Michael Bloomberg have against President Trump. This is not about taking the country forward. This is not about taking the country to the next level. This is not about helping working class people. This is a personal vendetta. And Democrats, and I come from a family of Democrats, the Democratic Party should be ashamed of itself that it's in this situation.
Well, you say oligarchs. I thought it was really interesting yesterday when that news first broke that he's considering choosing Hillary Clinton. A lot of people questioned, but wait a second, you're not supposed to have two candidates from the same state. They're both from New York. So that was very quickly changed by Michael Bloomberg apparently saying, well, that's okay. I've got a home in Colorado and I've got a home in Florida. I'll change my address to say that I'm from Florida. Can he do that?
This is what oligarchs do. Remember, on Tuesday night, March 3rd, in a couple of weeks, at midnight, when the California polls close out west, the Democratic Party will have an independent socialist in a moderate or liberal mayor, a Republican mayor of New York, as the two top guys running for the primary. There won't really be any Democrats around. This is why Hillary Clinton, and I believe that Bill Clinton's fingerprints are all over this. I think you can see Bill Clinton trying to get Hillary back in the game. And I said back in August, and I've said over for a year since, remember, Trump wouldn't be impeached if Michael Bloomberg hadn't put the $100 million up for the dirty 30, for those House seats. That, you know, this shows you that they have been thinking this through and that there was always going to be a reaction to Bloomberg buying the Democratic Party. He's doing a leveraged buyout of the Democratic Party. And the people, and, you know, there was going to be a counterreaction. He's trying to get in front of that by, you know, co-opting the Clintons now and working with the Clintons. The Bernie people, the Bernie movement have to understand now they are detested and despised as the deplorables are in the Trump movement. And I think this is a wake-up call for all of Bernie's people to say, hey, we are detested by Bloomberg. We're detested by the Clintons. Here we are, the front runner. They don't give us any respect. The liberal media doesn't give us any respect. I think the Bernie people now have to start to look for Donald Trump as their voice.
Well, look at this. He's
this
in
is
the
really
lead.
Smart, Bernie. Like him signaling hardcore. That's okay. We're good here. Him signaling hardcore left. And again, at seeing all the stuff that the corporate press has been doing to Bernie, Tulsi, and Andrew Yang, who suspended his campaign, of course. Steve Bannon is a clever, clever man. So whenever he talks, you have to read between the lines. So that was him kind of not talking to Bernie people directly, but kind of indirectly, but also kind of directly being like, hey, come with us. You're going to, you know, this is your only. And there's plenty of Bernie people who did end up going for Trump, or at the very least sat on their hands on Election Day. I wanted to update on an election that happened in Italy where I was talking about, oh, this is going to be a big election. And the election came and went and I didn't talk about it. So this was a big deal. Matteo Salvini, who is the head of the League Party, failed to overturn decades of left-wing rule in the northern region of Emilia-Romagna in an election that brought relief to the center-left. This is the one I was talking about, that it was possible that if he took his league took in the north, this would have been really an earthquake in Italian politics. So with 98% of the ballots counted, the incumbent Democratic Party, which is the Social Democrats, Stefano Bonaccini, he got 51.4% of the vote compared to Salvini's candidate, this according to Interior Ministry data. Salvini had campaigned relentlessly in the region since the start of the year. By the way, this story is like 2 weeks old, but I really needed everyone to catch up because I hate promoting something and then not having the payoff. So he had campaigned relentlessly in the region since the start of the year, which was seeking a shock victory that he hoped would bring down the government, the national government, which includes the PD, very much driven by internal strife. So that coalition led by the League did secure a resounding victory in a separate election in the southern region of Calabria, with the group's candidate forecast to take more than 50% of the vote. Then the Five Star Movement, that's the populist organization that's working with the equivalent of the Social Democrats in Italy, has suffered a brutal defeat in both regions. In Emilia-Romagna, they only got 3.5% of the vote, and in Calabria, 7.5% of the vote. Yikes. The League's defeat in Emilia-Romagna, which has been governed by the left since the end of the Second World War, is a big... It's amazing how... They voted left since the 40s. They still vote left. And, oh, it's a huge loss for Salvini. Is it? It's like, yeah, you couldn't really expect him to win. It's supposed to be a massive setback for Salvini because he had turned the elections into a referendum on the coalition between the PD and the Five Star Movement as he plots a return to power. And he threatened to send an eviction notice to the government if his coalition prevailed in this election. However, the next day, the more subdued Salvini told reporters in the early hours that he was proud of his group's performance and added that for the first time in 70 years, there was actually a match. Okay, so that is that story. Over the weekend, Amy Klobuchar, who's, again, under the radar and is picking up steam and did much better in New Hampshire than anyone and most people expected. There are others who expected it. I have to take that back. She is, as I said on this show, trying to position herself and is well positioned to be the Stop Bernie candidate as Biden completely vanishes. Now it looks like the party grandees want to give it to Bloomberg. She's not having any of it, and she's not having any of it for very legitimate reasons. And she went after him. It's amazing because all the other candidates we saw, of course, Tulsi versus Kamala Harris, they've all engaged with each other. This one says, this one says, Bloomberg's like a ghost. Like, no one talks to him, no one sees him, and she's not having it. And in a way, it's unfair. In another way, it's hilarious. Watch this.
colleagues, including Senators Warren and Sanders, have called for the Attorney General to resign. Do you think he should resign?
Sure, I'd be glad if he resigned. I just don't think that is realistic. And what is realistic right now, I didn't support him to begin with. I'm the one that grilled him on his expansive view of executive power, which all of that has come to roost. But what I think is realistic is that he is now going to testify in front of the House Judiciary Committee. I'd also like him to come to the Senate, and along with my colleagues, I've asked him to do that, so we can probe him on the role of the president in trying to influence decisions in the Department of Justice, in particular, the Stone decision. I just think it's outrageous, knowing how hard these career prosecutors work to do the right thing, how hard they work on a case like Roger Stone,
got him convicted,
and then get undermined when it comes to the sentencing.
Someone think of the executioners?
That's just not normal.
Okay, so Senator, let's talk about where you are now, the primary. Mm-hmm. And the calendar is about to get, and the states where you are about to get much more diverse. You finished very strong in New Hampshire, as you well know. And because of all of that, your time as a prosecutor in Minnesota's Hennepin County is getting more scrutiny. So I want to ask you about that. I want you to listen to what you said when you were running for prosecutor in 1998.
Ooh,
I think
receipts.
I'm going to look young. When you look at the crime rate in Hennepin County,
who
it's
is
not
that
acceptable.
Dude?
We have to look at making sure that there's a consequence when someone commits a crime. When you see the dramatic reductions
the
in crime in other parts of the country, we can learn a lot from what they're doing. And they're enforcing the law down the line.
So that tough-on-crime approach has now been linked to racial disparities in the criminal justice system. So in retrospect, do you regret that?
Well, let's set this up. I was running against a Republican opponent who actually was advocating for longer sentences as well as less gun control. So I was actually arguing when I talk about consequences, it can mean things like drug courts, like restorative justice, which was a major focus of my time in the county attorney's office.
Wait, and can we fast forward to when she's talking about Bloomberg? You'll see by the chyron. Because that's the money shot. Because they're... No, that's not it. Keep going. Racial disparities, isn't it? There we go. Ugh, what a looker.
I've always said that we are... What you want to see is people get reports.
Senator, I want to turn now to one of your opponents for the Democratic nomination, Mayor Mike Bloomberg. There's a report in the Washington Post this weekend that paints a sweeping picture of him making crass sexual comments, objectifying women, creating sexist culture in the workplace. Now, I want to be clear, Bloomberg has denied the allegations. He said on Twitter that he has zero tolerance for an environment where women aren't respected. What do you make of the reports?
I think he has to come on a show like yours here, Dana. He has not gone on any Sunday show since he announced. I've got to answer questions like I just did on my record. And he has to do the same thing. I don't think you should be able to hide behind airwaves and huge ad buys. He has to come on these shows, and I also am an advocate for him coming on the debate stage. I know I'm not going to be able to beat him on the airwaves, but I can beat him on the debate stage. Because I believe my argument for my candidacy is so much stronger. The Midwest isn't flyover country to me. I live there. The people that work there, like their poker chips, since I'm in Vegas, one of the president's bankrupt casinos, they're not poker chips to me. They're my friends and neighbors. When it comes to a state like Nevada, they have two women senators, majority women legislature. I have an incredibly strong argument here that this state, has put women in power really like no other state. And then finally, the work that I've done in terms of bringing people
all right,
with
so
me.
So that's her thing. She's very good at just completely avoiding. Oh, what do you think of these claims that Bloomberg basically had a sexual harassment scenario in his company? Well, I think he should debate me. Okay, that's good work there, Amy. We will have a lot more to cover tomorrow. Just a programming note, this Friday, Gina will be filling in for me as I will be starting my tour. We'll let you know more about that online, and I will see you tomorrow. And until then, I wish you sweet dreams.